Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Bowlology Report. I hope everyone's staying safe and isolated. If I had one wish, I wish big Mervyn Hughes had one more big bounce around him and knock over this coronavirus back to where it belongs. Joining me, as always, the big man, Bradley Bad Boy Hodge. Hodgy, how are you travelling in this isolated world?
No, Flynn, we're good, yeah. I'm glad, look, when you mentioned the great Mervyn Hughes there and thinking about isolation, I'm not sure if you wanted to cast your mind back to the early 90s and you used to be his roommate and the amount of flatulence that the guy yes. used to let out. I'm not sure he's the guy that you want to be isolated with in this current climate. The big fella after he's tucked down two or three pizzas and four cans of Coke. But if he could knock out a big bouncer or two, that'd be pretty cool to see. But other than that, we're trucking along nicely here. School, homeschooling is,
yes.
It's okay. It's a challenge. But, yeah, we're knocking it out of the park. It's all good.
So we're in the same position. We're doing a lot of the homeschooling's fit in. The fitness, a lot of running, a lot of bike riding, a lot of kicking the football. So that's all going nicely at this end. Watching a lot of TV, Hodgie. A lot of TV. If I went a top three of this week, Curb Your Enthusiasm. I don't know if you've watched that.
No.
Larry David's the main character. He wrote Seinfeld with Jerry. Just absolute gold. Pretty good. Two, Ozark. It's a dark, brooding thriller. Get into it.
Yeah, I've done that from start to finish. That finished straight away. Done that.
Oh, well. What about something that I reckon be up your boat? Have you gone Tiger King yet?
No, I haven't done Tiger King. No. I've seen it's got a lot of airtime. Haven't done Tiger King. I'll tell you what we have been doing. We've been watching... go for it.
Can I finish Tiger King, though? If you haven't seen it, this is... Premier Tiger King, also known as Joe Exotic, is a gay man with bleached mullet who is on meth, is married to multiple toothless men, owns a zoo with hundreds of tigers that he breeds, has his own internet television show, is a country singer, ran for president, wants to get a reality show, sometimes walks with a cane, sometimes not, carries a gun around and just shoots randomly. That's just one character. There's about four or five of them. I'm telling you, it's the Paul Adams in cricket terms. It's the frog in the blender show. You don't know what's going on.
Funny, you're talking about things to do in this isolation period, and I'm glad you just mentioned the frog in the blender because I was teaching. Well, we're doing some. Me and Sophie were doing some bowling out in the backyard. She's bowling some leg spin, and I tried to show her some really cool leg spinners on YouTube and stuff. So I showed her Warnie and a few, and we were talking about wrongins. And then, of course, the frog in the blender came up. So she's like, what's this action? And showed the frog in the blender, and she's like, how do you do that? Like, what's that all about? And I said, well, he's known as the frog in the blender. So pretty cool stuff. They're funny things which you discover whilst doing absolutely jack shit with your time.
No, it is. And I must admit, we both love our music. So when I'm riding or trying to get a run in, my three main playlists are hair metal from the 1980s. So there's Cinderella, Def Leppard, who else? A bit of Motley Crue. And then I've got the grunge best of. So Pearl Jam, Nirvana, a bit of Foo Fighters, Bush, Soundgarden, Alice in Chains, Stone Temple Pilots. And then I've gone just with an Aussie rock one that gets me going. Aussie Crawl, In Excess, The Vinyls, Boomcrash Hop, Midnight Oil, Hoodoo Gurus, The Angels. So it's good to go back and just catch up with some of the old music.
Wow, what a great bliss of music that is. What a combination. I don't think you could fault any one of those artists and not have a good time. They're amazing. What am I? I've been listening to a lot of country and western, actually, Luke Combs and things like that. I'm not sure.
Wow.
Yeah, it's gone through a country and western phase. I think, and it maybe had something to do with hanging out with Nathan Reardon over in India. I'm not sure, but yeah, just tapped into a bit of country and western, but still got all those.
And you talked about, you know, the Frog in the Blender, Paul Adams. There's a lot of In Isolation. A great man called Rob Alinda on Twitter is just punching out old retro clips left, right, and center. And there's been some absolute gold.
There has
been. Have you caught any of it?
Yeah, I have actually. And you know what I love about it is that the first person to make comment in reply to the video is the actual person involved in it themselves. So I've seen a couple with Mark Moore in it, first to comment. Greg Blewett's been there, been on it. All these people are broadcasters. It's pretty hilarious. And they go, oh, thanks, Rob. Thanks for posting that on. That looks awesome and stuff. They're the first ones to make comment on. It's brilliant.
Has he done any of you yet, though?
There was someone that did. I can't remember who it was. There was the 203 I scored against South Africa. So, yeah, there's a couple of good memories.
But even just looking through his feed here, you know, Chris Lewis opening the bat from England. You know, Brian Lara's 400. The Ambrose Steve Waugh one's getting a real good run. There's one from Ian Botham talking about how he deliberately ran out Jeff Boycott. Absolute gold here. And a lot of domestic stuff too. So if you haven't checked him out, Rob Moody on Twitter, make sure you do that.
Yeah, it's good. It's good stuff.
And Hodgie, you've organised a special guest for us today.
Well, here we are for the Bowlology Report, the Isolation Bowlology Report. Famo, welcome to you. We have picked things up after the World Cup, and I do have a special guest for us today, a World Cup winner. So she joins the likes of us, Flem, which is pretty cool. So I'd like to welcome to our Bowlology Report, Jess Johnson, all the way checking in from Brisbane. Welcome to our show.
Yes,
I'm glad that Flem finally got the technology right. It only took him 27 minutes to get it right, but welcome and congratulations. And we're looking forward to a chat.
No worries. Thanks for having me on. I don't know whether all 27 minutes were his fault though. I'm a bit of a Zoom newbie, so I'm a bit late to the party, but that's all right. We got there in the end.
Jess, congratulations about being a T20 World Cup winner. So having that, and then also coming on to the Bowlology Report, has your career just peaked?
It has. I mean, I never thought that I'd be able to be on something like this. I mean, you guys would know what it's like playing in front of big crowds, and now I can say that I've joined the club and also joined this club as well. So,
I'm not sure. I never played at Eden Gardens. I did play at Eden Gardens at a pre-packed house. I got the feeling that you've won the player out of this trio to have played in front of the biggest crowd. Just talk us through that experience and what the crowd peaked at. I know Flem was there because I don't know if you saw him or not. Everyone's social media saw him because he was proudly presenting that he was at the game. But just talk us through that experience and how fun it was and how big the crowd was.
Look, it was amazing. But obviously the crowd that you would have played in front of for a Boxing Day test would have been pretty big. But
it was 78,000, so not as big as that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so we had just over 86,000, almost 87,000 people. It's something throughout my whole career that I never thought I'd ever play in front of a crowd like that. And I don't know, it was really weird. I thought that I was going to be really nervous for it because it's something that I've never done. But I was probably more nervous in the lead up to the whole game than I was out on the field hearing everybody. And I think I could probably speak for a lot of the other girls in the team that we just sort of used it and embraced it. And I think that allowed us not to be as nervous as people probably would have expected everybody to be.
And were many of the girls distracted by, when I played my Boxing Day test match, I don't know whether this happened to Flem, but it's amazing how many your family members you've never spoke to for the best part of 20 years come out of the closet, want to wish you the best, ask them for tickets. I'm sure in your case they're saying, look, we're going to fly down from Brizzy, we're going to come to the MCG. Can you hustle up 20 tickets for us? Is that possible? Did that happen?
Yeah, well, it probably actually happened even before the World Cup even started. Like, obviously, there was such a big build-up about it and everyone's like, oh, you better make the final now because we bought tickets and all of this. And I'm like, well, what are you going to do if something happens and we don't make it? So it was sort of, you had that sort of expectation from the beginning. But at the same time, it was sort of, yeah, once it got closer, for me, it was more so, well, whatever family or friends I could get there, it would have been, it was great. And I was able to fly one of my sisters and her little family and my niece and nephew and all of them down. And mum and dad followed us around for the whole World Cup. So that was pretty special to have them there as part of it. And it was sort of, it only really sunk in with all those sort of people afterwards when we were in the change rooms. And it was probably one of the most packed change rooms post-match that I've ever been a part of. And it just goes to show where the women's games got to, though, that gone are the days when it used to just be your family and your parents in the crowd cheering you on, that now it's bloody Bobby down the road or Linda from Innisfail or something that's making the trek down. So that's something that, I don't know, it feels really special to be a part of.
Well, Jess, I've seen both sides. I've won and lost a World Cup, and it's fair to say the winning one at Lords was a free-for-all for everyone. There's Bobby Hawke, there's just everyone there. When we lost in Karachi, no, there wasn't too many supporters around. But back to your final, I don't know if you saw me
there. I know
what
that's like too.
I don't know if you saw me. I was just in the member stand, KEF23, with my wife and two daughters. Sent out some very subtle social media things just to keep it under there. But how electric, I mean, you're obviously watching there, but for us in the crowd, when Alyssa Healy got going from ball one, it was just amazing. I mean, that momentum must have meant so much, obviously on the field, but off field for the teammates.
Yeah, it did. I think I was actually a little bit nervous for her at the beginning because after we'd won the toss and we were batting, obviously Katy Perry was performing on the field and it was a bit of a disjointed warm-up sort of thing to what we're used to, that we had to be off the ground sort of half hour or whatever before we needed to be out there for the anthems. And there was, once we said, oh yeah, we're batting, all us bowlers were like, yep, great, this is awesome, we get to watch Katy Perry's songs and then we can race down and get ready and we don't need to worry about performing for a while. But then Midge is up there as well, and Ash Gardner and Pez was there, and I think Pez said to Midge, like, don't you need to actually go get ready to bat? And she's like, oh yeah, shit. She actually forgot, oh yeah, I'm just about to go out and open in a World Cup final at home. But I think in saying that, that probably was the best preparation for her, that she wasn't actually thinking about cricket or about the game. She was thinking, how good is this occasion? And Deepti Sharma, she bowled the first over, and she'd sort of got India off to a good start in a lot of their games, and particularly their games against us, both in the first game and the T20 Tri-Series leading into it. So to hit her first two balls or whatever it was for four, really put them on the back foot. And then obviously being dropped in the first over as well ended up being quite a costly one.
Now, Jess, spoke about seizing the moment as a sports player. Did you recognise that moment when Katy Perry was out there and your disjointed warm-up was there that you had the opportunity, anyone went up to Matthew Mott after your winning performance and said, listen, all warm-ups are out. We're done with warm-ups. There's no need. Let's just cut them all back. I mean, I can recall a few of my greatest innings where there was zero warm-up to be taken. This is an opportunity. Cannot be missed. I think there's something you should look at.
Well, who even likes warm-ups anyway? Like, no, that's the one thing. Like, that's something that you always say to people who are retiring, oh, enjoy no more warm-ups. So it obviously works.
Yeah,
it was just another distraction. And I think for us, it was just another thing that was something we had to sort of get over and adjust and find a way to, like, get the job done. And, I'm all for no more warm-ups. That'd be amazing.
And just going back to the start of the World Cup, that first game up in Sydney, when I was sitting here watching the game and I thought, what an absolute dog tip of a wicket that's rolled out to suit the Indians. Did any of the girls in the dressing room after that realise that, or did they know that, or were expecting it, or the frustration was there, or was it just sort of parked and go, okay, well, it's happened now. Let's move on. We're going to move to really good venues like the MCG, because in Melbourne we produce good wickets.
Yes.
I just wanted to know whether that was something which you found as a frustration, because I certainly would have been frustrated. It felt that it was definitely dictated towards India getting off to a better start than Australia.
Yeah, it was a bit frustrating. Like, we knew what we were going to expect. We knew it was going to happen, obviously, with a lot of the Big Bash games that are being played there, and knowing the type of wicket, and knew it was going to suit slower bowling and the spinners. And in saying that, though, we had a couple of games there. We had an intra-squad practice match. We had a centre wicket thing there. So we were sort of as well prepared as we could be. It just was a matter that on that night we didn't actually execute playing the slower bowlers how we would have liked, and we got off to a really good start with the bat, and then throughout the middle, obviously when one of their bowlers take four for not many, it's sort of in T20 cricket it's going to be quite difficult to actually get over the line for that. But yeah, without a doubt we were all frustrated. And but I think, obviously, you guys would know the beauty of tournament play as well is you don't actually have much time to dwell on things like that. And knowing for us how much we were travelling during the World Cup, and the fact that the next venue we were going to was the Wacker, so you have one extreme to the next, and you have maybe one training session, if that, to sort of adjust to a completely different set of circumstances. And I think that probably also showed in our second game against Sri Lanka, where we almost stuffed that one up as well. So there was a lot of nerves going around at that point as well. Obviously, you've got the expectation of a home World Cup, but then you also have the expectation that you put on yourself anyway whenever you go out and represent your country. So, adding into it completely contrasting elements, it's very challenging. But, obviously it worked out in the end.
Just going back to Hodgie's warm-up scenario, I thought he was going to go that you had to go to Matthew Mott, that you needed an international singing superstar for every warm-up before each game. But back to the actual...
Well, I wouldn't say no to that either.
Well, who would you nominate? Who's your favourite musician?
Oh, anybody. Like, I think people who can perform without auto-tune, it can come. Anybody like that. So I don't know. I'm really open to
a little bit more specific, Jess. I'll give you a little prod if you would like. So,
okay.
In a dressing room, as you know, there's certain people that like particular style of music. Yep. So, if Flem was in charge of the rock box, we would definitely have some Metallica, maybe some Motorhead.
Yeah.
Shane Watson would have the Backdoor Boys or Boys to Men, whatever they're called. So that gets thrown out the door.
Don't forget Steve Waugh's Country and Western. How bad was that?
That might suit Jess. But
just because I'm from the country doesn't mean I necessarily like country music.
Ooh, sorry about
Which
that.
Which way would you go? If you had full control of the rock box in the stadium, which way would you go?
For me, on a game day or gym or whatever, it's maybe a bit of Fallout Boy, something like that.
Yep, not bad.
It's got to be something that's a bit pump up type stuff. You can't sort of have slow ballads or anything on that day. But yeah, anything sort of poppy or current, I'm all for it. But yeah, there are a few country bumpkins in the team.
Is that because it partners your white line fever that you have?
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people know about that, white line fever.
What's that?
Just explain to everyone what white line fever is, what it feels like, and what happens to you.
Well, some of my best examples would be somebody's a bit like a kitten off the field, sort of all nice to everybody and whatnot, wants everybody to do well, and then as soon as you cross the line, you go onto the field, then it's like, nah, game on. If you're in my way, you'll know about it. I'm here to win and do what I can to do it.
I like it. Back to the music, I just want to say I bagged Steve Waugh, but his favourite artist just passed away, Kenny Rogers, so rest in peace, Kenny.
Gambler.
He was and the coward, though. So not a great mix. Back to the tournament here, Jess. Injuries, struggling early. You're the favourites for the tournament, and you talked about it's all about momentum. Was the belief still there going into the semi-final against South Africa? Do you remember a moment that you know the team stood their ground or leaders to go, hang on, we are the best team and we can still win this? What was the feeling going into that semi-final?
Well, obviously the weather was a massive talking point going into that there was all this talk about, oh, this happened in the Big Bash the Big Bash final as well, and who in their right mind sort of programs or schedules cricket in Sydney in March? It's the wettest month of the year and all that sort of stuff. And Motti actually told us leading into it to make sure we stayed off the radar, and I don't think a single person listened to him. So I was probably checking it every 5 seconds and thinking, oh, it's not going to change. And it was the topic of every conversation. So it probably wasn't a bad thing that we were talking about the weather. Then people were sort of not really talking about the cricket, so to speak. And I think it was always going to be one of those things that we were preparing to play, but it was always in the back of everybody's mind that, oh, well, what if we don't, then we don't make it through to the final. We don't even get an opportunity. And we obviously saw that with the game prior to us, that they didn't even get on with India and England. And I think it actually, schedule-wise, we were meant to be that first game in terms of the Group A, Group B matchup stuff. But right. When it came through that we qualified, then they wanted us to be in the prime time slot. So it actually, there were so many things that like we couldn't control that went in our favour, that we had so much luck on that day that it was probably once we won that semi-final, then we were like, there was this weight lifted off. It was almost actually, I had a conversation with Elisa about it, and it was almost after the group stage had finished, we were like, oh, okay, like there was almost this relief that we got out of the group stage, because I think it turned out if we didn't get out of there, it would have been the first time in history that the Australian women's team didn't get out of the group stage of a World Cup. So we didn't want to be the first team for that to happen to at any point, let alone at a home World Cup.
And then also no bowlology report for losers.
That's right.
Correct. I know. Nobody cares about you, do they?
I mean, this has to be, you know, when this goes on record later on in life, when, you know, you're thinking about past experiences and you talk about this whole year being stuck indoors, there's probably only going to be two things that stand out, and that's Katy Perry and the biology report, for sure.
I know. I was talking about Katy Perry for months, and I actually think I jinxed my wedding because of it, because I said to my partner, I was like, oh, I'm sorry, but I don't even think our wedding day is going to top how today's made me feel. And it turns out then all this coronavirus stuff's happening, we've had to postpone the wedding. So
I've heard you postpone your wedding and your honeymoon's out the door. What's the plans going forward? What can you do?
Just wait until all this calms down and, sort of we can't even book a tentative future date because we don't know how long we're going to be isolated, how long the various venues are going to be closed down. And we put a lot of stress, a lot of planning into it that we don't want it to go to waste. So we actually want to have the day that we planned. Like that under there, that's our little checklist board. So it's still sitting there. We haven't even put that away yet. So, but when the 2nd of May comes around, I think I'll be having a few drinks just in, I'll be a bit gutted that day because that was the day we were meant to get married.
You know what, Jess? Since things have gone south for me and Flem and our incomes have gone south, we've taken up opportunities to expand and we've both got temporary licenses as celebrants. So, if it comes around that you want to have, that joint marriage on the biology report on the 2nd of May, it'll cost you a small fee, but it won't be much. We're open to opportunities in this tough environment.
Well, you've got to keep looking to expand your horizons, don't you, especially at times like this. Oh. You can't close any doors, can you?
Now, what about off-field? Let's go back. Sorry, Flem. You can't close doors. Are there any doors open for you? I want to talk to you about your achievements outside of cricket, and that's I understand that you have a law degree, studying or have a degree in criminal psychology. Is that right?
Wow.
Yeah, I did a grad certificate in forensic mental health, and I've just enrolled in a little 8-week course of criminal psychology. So stuff I'm very interested in, and I read a lot about it, and who knows, might have a future post cricket in that.
With those topics, I played with Brad for about 10 years, so if you need some case scenario or case studies, I can provide that on a former teammate.
Yeah. Want to get people out of some tricky situations. Are you calling him a criminal?
We have a lot of case studies, I reckon, Jess, that you could tap into. We've had a lot of our teammates went through a phase where at certain nightclubs they run around on their hands and knees and bite people on the ankles, all sorts of bizarre behaviour, which...
Naming any names, Bradley Hodge?
No, it wasn't me.
It wasn't you. And barking, hence the nickname
barking
Doggy.
Barking like dogs.
Yes, hence his name Doggy Jess.
Fair enough.
Yeah. He was a pretty good all-rounder and he's now living in England. His name is Ian Harvey, but that's another case study. We've got plenty more. But talk us through what's going to happen. Great that you're able to study through your period of cricket time. Was it difficult? And how long did that process take?
It was difficult. I think I didn't actually realise how challenging it was until I went back and did my grad certificate. So I finished my law degree in 2015 and I was sort of lucky enough that my first couple of years of that degree, I hadn't broken into the Aussie setup yet. So I was able to get a fair chunk of that out of the way doing it full time. So then when I broke into the Aussie stuff and was traveling a bit, it was a bit easier because it was sort of the back end of the degree that I didn't necessarily have to go to classes, that everything was available online, so it made it much easier. And it was sort of, I was probably lucky in the sense that where the women's game was at that point, there wasn't as much travel, there wasn't as many games, so I was able to dedicate a lot more time to it. And then I spent sort of a couple of years where I was just wanted to just solely focus on cricket, and because pretty much as soon as I finished school, I moved from Rocky down here to Brizzy, and I'd been at uni sort of full-time for I think it was 5 or 6 years it took me. And then I was just like, I'm sick of the studying routine. I just want to have a break. And then, got into my grad certificate last year and I was like, oh, my gosh, how am I even meant to do this? I was doing it part-time and I was just like, I just can't find the motivation, I can't find the time. And it was just, yeah, it was so bizarre, the difference in terms of what the cricket schedule was like. And then having Alfie at that point, I was like, well, God, I didn't have the dog last time, but he's taking up all of my spare time now. You just find ways not to do it. But no, I ended up getting it done. It only took me a year. So, yeah, and then here I am now, stuck in isolation and wanting to do yet another thing.
I found an amazing array of excuses to postpone my university stuff, Jess. So plenty there if you need it. I'm curious about when you...
Oh, gee, just quickly, how long did it take you to complete your degree?
From start to finishing master's, 14 years.
Yeah, very good. Very good.
Nice. I'll tell you what happened, Jess. So for the first, both of them were three-year studying periods. I churned out the first 2.5 years, no problem. But sort of just gone, you know what, I've done it now. I'm finished. I've done 10 out of 12 subjects. And I just didn't want to commit to finishing those last two subjects. And I'm not sure why, but I think it was, if I completed them, it was probably an avenue to think, well, you should take that. If I don't complete it, then I'm stuck in cricket and I need to make it work. I think that's my subconscious mind. Something you may be able to study, but I'm not sure why it took that long. I think I was just trying to actually graft out the ACA for as much pain as I could possibly graft them down for. Going back to your taking cricket professionally and stuff, I want to talk to you about the little secret battle that you had, I guess, with Sophie Molyneux, and it was a time where. Yeah, and it was great that you got back in the same side and played the World Cup final. But there was a time where you're in a battle. There's two left-arm orthodoxes, both good with the bat, good in the field, both good people. It's a really hard task. And I had my battles around Australia everywhere. There was Cadditch, Simons, Clark, Martin, Siddons, yep. Lehman, Hussey, everyone you name of. You just look and secretly go about how they're going about. And then you come in and get your job done. I just want to know about, you know, how that was hard to manufacture and even jumping ahead of such a good contributor in Australian cricket.
Yeah, look, it's obviously, it was challenging, and particularly in the circumstances that sort of came about early on, that obviously there was the 2018 T20 World Cup in the West Indies where I got injured. Sort of, it was going to be really challenging sort of getting back in the first place, let alone now, like, there's somebody who in my eyes I saw did the exact role that I was wanting to try and do for the side. And it took sort of a good few months to sort of come to terms with it and have various conversations with Moddy and selectors and whatnot about what things will look like moving forward, that they've constantly told both of us that even though we're both left arm spinners and good with the bat in the field, like you said, that they see us occupying two completely different roles within the side, even though we're both the same. So it took me a while to actually, I guess, believe that and sort of have that faith that, I was able to go and do the job that was required, however that might look, whether it means that I don't bowl in the power play anymore, that I bowl somewhere else, or what that might be. And I think for the recent T20 World Cup and probably the Ashes prior to that, that I thought I was able to do that, that it was, I had to learn to contribute in different ways over in the West Indies in that T20 World Cup, which I think really set me up from then to realize, well, I don't have to contribute how I have in the past to actually make an impact on the side. So and it was sort of one of those things that I was in the side and then I got injured, then Soph got in there, and then Soph got injured, and then I was back in, and then we finally got to play in a few games together. And it was actually really nice that nobody saw it as, well, nobody within the team setup sort of saw it as us competing for the one spot. And I think, yeah, it's going to be interesting going forward to obviously when we all go back, I guess, from this isolation stuff, that everybody's injuries are all good. And obviously, yeah, with Pez getting injured during that World Cup, it probably opens up a door, I guess, if we've got tours before she's right, to someone to get an opportunity to bat in the middle order a little bit more in the 50-over stuff. So, yeah, it's going to be exciting, but it was definitely challenging early days.
Hey, just on your batting, how hard is it getting a hit in the Australian T20 team? I mean, you've got to test 99 on debut. You can talk us through that.
That's still
dismissal.
Too soon.
But
yeah, it was like what five years ago, and I was still.
Is it too soon?
No, I just I still can't believe. Trying to hit it too hard.
But how much do you have to adjust your game, knowing that you might go in with, you know, a few balls as opposed to having the opportunity to hit the gaps and build your innings?
It's hard. I think for me, wanting to sort of have a bit more consistency around my batting was something that I've really sort of wanted to achieve over the last few years. And it was probably only recently in last year's WBBL that I felt I was able to do that. And I've done a lot of good work with Noffers, and he sort of helped me gain that ability in myself with the bat again that I sort of lost for a few years. And yeah, it's sort of, I'm excited obviously when we get out of isolation about what I can actually do with my training then. I think for me, I've had one solid year recently in the Big Bash with that I want to sort of build on it and have three or four solid seasons in a row with it. That obviously the more consistent that I keep scoring runs, the potential of more opportunities to come my way. And I saw that I had a couple in the World Cup, the two opportunities I had, and I sort of felt like I blew it. I just, because I wasn't used to actually like being in those situations within the Australian side, that I just went completely away from everything that I know works for me. And
yes, I was texting Moddy the whole campaign. Get her up the order. You finally get your chance at Sydney. What happens? You shank one to long on. What's that all about?
I know. I'd actually had about a 90-minute conversation with Noffers the night before on the phone, because I was like, I was like, I need to talk to you. It's like, this is what's like, help me out here. And I was just like, I was so clear in what I wanted to do. And regardless of the situation, I was like, yeah, this is what's going to happen. And I went in there. I was like, yep, still 10 overs to go. You don't need to do anything stupid. Just get yourself in, blah, blah, blah. It's like you have that moment of realization when you're walking off the field. You're like, are you serious? What did you just do?
Like, can I give you a piece of information, Jess? Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah.
You've got a law degree and you've had a 90-minute conversation before a semi-final with a fast bowler about batting. No wonder it went pear-shaped. No wonder it went pear-shaped.
He was a very handy bat, though. Noffers, wasn't he? He was a very handy lower-order bat.
In what he has to say. Doesn't necessarily mean it equates to his own ability, but what he has to say is good.
What's his good points? What's he got for you? What's he offer?
Well, for me, he knows the areas that I am best at in terms of I'm good on the short ball, can punch down the ground for ones. And he's just saying for me, it doesn't really matter what it looks like. If you're scoring runs, then you're doing your job. I was always so concerned with making sure that my shots looked good or that it felt good and hit the middle and whatnot. But he kept saying, if you're shanking one, but you're in a good position and you're still getting runs and you're still doing your job, he's basically like, as soon as you have the bat in your hand, your job's to score runs. Doesn't matter how, you just do it in the way that is best for you. And it took a while for me to sort of come to terms with that, because there was different ways that I wanted to bat, but I wasn't actually there yet. I was so caught up in wanting to bat like how other people do, instead of figuring out, well, how is it that I bat as an individual? And he really helped me grasp the understanding of that.
Jess, what about back to the World Cup final? You run out there, you got runs on the board, massive crowd, and you open the bowling, take 3 for 20. But the bowling partnership, Megan shoots innies, your left arm orthodox, very good bowling partnership.
Yeah, I always love bowling with Shooter, stats guy, and he came back and with this big essay saying, well, no, Shooter, you're actually a really good matchup and here is why. And then, yeah, it's sort of after her very first shot off the first ball that she's just smoked it, but it then plugged in the ground for two, I was like, oh, God, she's on today, that she's just gone out first ball at she's faced and she's absolutely clubbed it. And then, yeah, as soon as she nicked the next one, then I had a bit of enjoyment making sure I went up to Shooter and was like, oh, see, oh, yeah, not a good matchup, my ass. And it was a lot of banter between the girls after that, because Shooter's one person that she absolutely despises being wrong about something. So for for that to come off and to get her early, it sort of gave everybody or every other bowler sort of, I guess, a bit of relief that knew how destructive she was against anybody, that as soon as Shefali was out, then we were sort of able to settle in. And obviously, yeah, having the runs on the board in such a, I guess, massive game in a final, sort of India were always going to be on the back foot, particularly losing Shefali early because she got them off to flyers in every single game.
And what about the winning moment? Can you talk us through that?
Yeah, well, I think during my last over, they were nine down, and I was secretly hoping that I'd be able to be the one to take the last wicket. But then, yeah, they just bowled on the spot and they just kept blocking. And I actually think I might have even said it out loud. I was like, oh, boring. And then we were just really set on making sure that we finished the game on our own terms. We didn't want them to sort of face out the overs and have sort of the last ball just be a dot or a single or whatever. We actually wanted to win by taking all 10 wickets. And I think I was in at mid-wicket, and I remember Shooter coming in and bowling, and then there was a big swipe across the line, and there was a bit of a drone vision from out a bit further, and I was almost just like jumping up on the spot, sort of willing it to carry to Ash out in the boundary. And I remember seeing her sprinting in towards me and then stuck in her hands. And yeah, it was just being able to be sort of that first person part of it that,
yeah,
like when you've just won something like that, it was really cool. And I think I lost my hat. I got a few elbows in the face, and yeah, it's just those sort of moments that just that sheer elation and almost relief that we were able to do it, that there was so much sort of promotion around it, so much support from everybody, that it almost would have felt like we'd let people down if we didn't win. Even though people would say, oh, no, that wouldn't have been the case and all of that. But I think it was actually nice to be able to get the result that so many people wanted for us to get.
I got one, Jay. I don't know whether you saw it or whether the team talked about it, but it was the recipe for World Cup success, or making sure you're in the highlights for World Cup success. So there was a player that I think it was Headingley, actually, who had the opportunity to bowl the last over, what you were sort of talking about, hoping to close out a wicket, but was smart enough to bowl a couple of pies to a guy named Lance Klusner, and he pumped them through the covers as hard as anyone could have. And so I don't know whether the theatre that you girls talked about was, you know, you talked about that moment in time where there was a guy named Fleming bowled a couple of pies, and then there's a few fumbles and an underarm down towards this player named Gilchrist. So really they could have got the job done a hell of a lot easier if he did what he was meant to, but it was more about the theatre about finishing off an event in such style as that?
Well, it's funny you say that, because in our last round game against New Zealand, Ash Gardner bowled the last over, and it was the same game that Pez got injured, and Ash bowled some absolute pies in that over. And she was saying afterwards, she was like, I don't even know what was going through my brain. And like, the school book says that we won by 4 runs or whatever, but we should have probably won by more. It was probably lucky that she had 19 to defend in that over.
She knew exactly what she was doing, JJ. I'll tell you what she was doing, making sure that she is on the World Cup highlight reel for the rest of her life. That's what it's all about. It's not about victory. It's about that.
Yeah. Well, and nobody's going to remember that last over that she played. They're going to only remember the winning catch that she took running in.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, and back to my little scenario. That's a 5-minute psychology degree right there. Hey, Jess, what about the celebrations with Katy Perry? Was that all organised? Talk us through that scenario.
Well, we actually were joking about it the whole time. We were like, oh, if we win, then hope we get to party on stage with Katy Perry, or we'll have a private meet and greet or whatever. And then, yeah, sort of just joking about it, thinking it was never going to happen. And we were sort of in the change room for quite a while, and then obviously a few players were getting drug tested and whatnot, and then they'd sort of sectioned off an area out in the field just for us. We got these wristbands, and we were able to be out there, and we were jumping around like absolute lunatics, still in our playing kit with the medals around our necks, sprinting through randoms. And then, yeah, we were in this little sectioned off area, and we had Burnsy, Pez and Molly Strano were getting up on the advertising board that was up around the field, and they were on there dancing away. And it took probably a good maybe 10 minutes for security to come over and tell them that they needed to get down. But there were a few ripper photos that came out of it. And it was sort of, I don't know how it happened. I think somebody from the ICC might have been floating in and around, and we were talking about wanting to get up there, or, oh, when are we getting on stage with her? And he was sort of just like, oh, I'll leave it with me, and came back probably 5 minutes later and said, yep, come with me. And then I started streaming around the outside of the field, and we ran past all these police. And I think they must have thought that we were starting some sort of stampede or something, because the looks on their faces, they're like, what's happening here? And there's just this group of screaming girls as if we're teenagers running after a boy band or something. And we ended up waiting around the back of the stage for a while and saying, well, when are we going to get up there? Are we even going to get up there? And, ended up, and they extended her concert for another 15, 20 minutes. And got up there, and then it wasn't until after that we realised Rach didn't get up there with us. No. She was too busy doing her drug test. We thought everybody was there because Georgia Wareham was another one that was getting drug tested, but her chaperone was running along with us. She was there at the back, and because I was like, how did you get up there and Rach wasn't? But Rach was outside for a little while and then she left, and nobody realised until after, and we were talking about how amazing it was. And we got to hug Katy Perry, and then poor Rach didn't get to experience it.
So, and you can't sort of lie and go, Rach, it wasn't that good, because
it was freaking amazing.
I just thought it was incredible.
Rach could have got out of it. She could have got out of it. She said,
"No way." She was gutted.
Yeah, well, she could have been, but she could have actually said to the testers, listen, I'm not sure if you've seen my form for the last 6 months, but it has been great. There's going to be no performance-enhancing drugs in my body, so let me off this time, I'll be fine. So, but disappointing.
Of all the timing, the time just wasn't great. And there was obviously no way we could have contacted her to be like, come on, we're getting up on stage. And, she got out of the drug testing, and the physio, I think, went up to her and was like, oh, how amazing was it to be on stage? And she's like, are you serious? She had no idea. And then, in we come screaming. We're like, we love you, Katy, and just running by. And, it was.
How did she take it?
Yeah. she was gutted, and I don't know. She, I think though, to be honest, she'd take winning a World Cup than having to party with Katy Perry. But if she got to choose her time again, I reckon she'd probably take a strike from the drug testers and get up on the stage.
Hey, Jess, thanks a lot for giving us your time on the Bowlology Report. Hodgie, how good a guest. Well organised. Well done on the World Cup T20 win. Stay safe in isolation. Keep your social media posts coming too. What was your dog's name again? It's getting a great run.
Alfie.
Alfie. Yeah.
Alfie.
It's not out there. It's not outlandish enough to gain social media promotion awards on our show.
No. I'm a bit boring when it comes to that.
Yeah, you're not out there. You need to lift your game there a little bit. If you want, there's some superstars amongst our group, Greg Norman, Michael Clark, to name a few, Dean Jones. There's some real people who you can take on board and have a look at their posts and see what it's all about. Last question before you go, and it's a one-word answer. There's no discussion point. Who was the better player to wear the number 17 for their country? Yeah. You can see in the background, Hodge, Fleming, or Lanning. Which one?
Lanning.
Oh, right, that's it. You're done with this shot, right? First and last time.
I have to say that because I want to keep playing.
Yeah, well, that is comparing us to one of the greatest batters of all time, Hodgie. I don't think we're in Meg Lanning's class. We are nowhere near that.
Haven't you heard the rumours that me and Fleming are going to take up a post of chief selectors of the Australian women's cricket team in the future? Yep. Dug yourself in your hole there, JJ.
If she's still going to be skipper, I think I'm all right.
All right.
Jess, thanks for your time. Keep safe.
No worries. You too, guys. Thank you.
Hodgie, how good was Jess? Absolutely brilliant interview. Yeah.
It's good. It's amazing. Quality performer at the Australian level. And just what an experience to win a World Cup for the girls. We all watched it. It was phenomenal. You were there to see it all at hand. It was just a fantastic day for everyone involved.
And looks like she could star as the Jodie Foster person in Silence of the Lambs in Australia. She's a criminologist, she's psychologist, she's just every ologist going on. She's got a big career ahead of her, away from cricket, Jess.
That's the thing in cricket. There's plenty of case studies to find some people with some psychological issues for sure. She's got plenty of...
Hodgie, this segment's become massive because of the worldwide conditions we're living in at the moment location. It was the reason people weren't on social media because you were calling them out. But, that's unloaded now. I think they're happy to get called out. It's Hodgie's Social Media Self-Promoter Award. Far away, Hodgie.
Well, here we go. There's been a few. And it's not surprising that we've got some sports stars in isolation with nothing better to do with their time than get their own face on the social platforms. Now, I'm going to start with one of the legends of the game, and he's been in the media just recently. So I'm not sure whether that counts as a bit of self-promotion itself, but our great friend, the Professor Dean Jones, was just out casually walking through Romsey just recently, just making sure, posting a video of himself, make sure he's staying in routine and encourage everyone to stay in routine and go for a 6 to 8 kilometre walk. He does this apparently every day.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure Dino hasn't been home for the last 4 months. So I'm not sure how staying in a routine in Romsey has anything to do with promotion of staying in a routine. So that's Dino. Another one from Dino, and he must be bored out there in Romsey. Went in and just had a jumper. Old-fashioned jumper, just said to everyone, can anyone understand which jumper this is? So I was, guess the jumper. I'm not sure. It was his Durham jumper from, whatever, 1987. There's no need. That's Dino at his best. Channel 7's very own Baz McCullum makes an appearance as well. So Buzz has been very, very vocal.
Prolific.
On one, a lot of, I'll tell you what I'm disturbed at the moment. How many people are coming out showing themselves doing weight and gym programs in this period of time? Now, Baz has been phenomenal at that. I'm pretty sure I've never seen him do it. The other one is he wants to thank at williamswarn.com.au, brew kit. So, and he talks about how he's fermenting some beer and some... We know what you're up to, Baz. You've got a free ton of beer and you just got to get it on social media. Good job. Bang. We love it.
Bang.
The Sharks made a welcome return.
Oh, thank God.
And the Shark is, I don't want to cast everyone's mind off, but he's showing lots of clips of the past. You talk about those past cricketers, Flem, but the Shark's taking it to a new level. All the old Cobra clubs that he used. He's got photos with Seve Ballesteros. No one gives a shit, Shark. But what I love about this one is that he's just, again, walking with the Baywatch shorts on in a beautiful resort in Florida, just saying, I wish I was here. Well, you're not, Shark. You're in isolation in what's probably a $100 million house. You just wanted to show yourself off half naked again in a sexual pose. So that's
why we love him. We love him.
Wasn't this a piece of social media gold from Mark Waugh, which spruced a bit of activity in the world? And that was him just showing everyone, I think it was 8 to 10 of his V500 or V100 Schlesingers.
And a Super Tusker.
And the Super Tusker, yes. I'm pretty sure he stole it off Mark Taylor, but if he wants to put it in there, that's fine. But
I reckon Tubby was the main man, wasn't he?
Super Tusker. Yeah. He was trying to poach on Tubby there for sure. But
I'm angry at that.
Mark Waugh, well done. That was a sneaky little post there. I'm going to mention KL Rahul. This is a disturbing trend in a lot of the Indian players at the moment. So last 9 posts of KL Rahul have just been selfies of himself doing absolutely nothing. And it just like little quotes like, this time, this place. I don't get it.
But what's that mean? To you,
KL. I know what you're on to, KL. You've got nothing to do except post beautiful photos of yourself. We're all over you. This one is particularly disturbing, and it's a joint venture, M. Stark and A. Healy.
Ooh.
It's their 4-year anniversary, apparently. And it's posted as Alyssa saying it's a 4-year anniversary and Mitch saying, hashtag, it's mine. But what I find disturbing is both parties actually had to post, you know, the same thing. So one of them's done it for love. One of them's done it for pure self-promotion. I'm not sure which one.
Okay.
So it's a disturbing trend from these two online.
But happy 4th anniversary, though. Yeah.
Happy, correct. Congratulations. I stumbled on this little piece of gold. Jason Berendorf was his son's second 2-year-old birthday. Thanks, Deb, for at Kingdom Cupcakes Perth. You're a star. Thanks. You can pay for them next time, Jace. We're on to you. And this, I mentioned this, I've only got him in there because this person's he's trying to either be the next Michael Clark or the next Steve Smith. And I've got Manus in there.
Manus,
I'm saying he's the new pup. 2 out of his last 4 social media posts have been about him in his garage doing weights and his gym program and stuff. Manus, it's disturbing. Leave that to the superstars like Pup. You know, do your shadow batting. Get your kookaburra on there like you've done, you know, but not this. This is not you, mate. This is not why we love you.
He's sort of been copying Stephen Smith on the field with his batting. What's to stop him copying Michael Clark in a social media sense? That's where he's heading.
That's what I'm disturbed about, and I might have to have a chat to him. It's more of a nomination, and I don't want to see him back here. It's self-promotion at its worst, and it's not his style.
Oh, gee, this is as fired up as I've ever seen you in the Social Media Self-Promoter Award. And I'd imagine by the next one, it's sort of like Christmas for you, though, that there's millions out there.
There's lots out there. There was a lot of honourable mentions I went through. There was lots.
Save them up.
I want to make special mention. I'm not putting it on there because the time's passed. But Ben Dunk, I've never seen so much self-promotion through a Pakistan Super League as anyone in one particular tournament. Now, I just want to clear this up. He was not seen during the Big Bash. Why? Because you didn't play that well. Now you're scoring 99s, you're flogging it everywhere. Bang! Well done to Benny Dunn. Honourable mention.
Gee, you've just given a little smash there. Boats, Dino, 6 for 2. Cahill Rahul, 9 posts. That's 6 voter there. The Sharks, 6 votes. And he's going to be hard to catch. Interesting, no Steve Waugh. Tugger's quieting down. But can you... No, it was Punter, wasn't it, last week?
Punter was there last week, yes.
Yeah. I reckon Bazza, 3 and 3. We know about the freebies, mate. Junior, 4. I reckon the Stark Healy one, it's 4 for 1 of them. We'll work that out. Jason Berendorf, just a sneaky little 2-point voter there. And Manus, I reckon you're going to have to keep on track with Manus. He's got 5, and I expect him to go further and further up the leaderboard. Outstanding nominations, Bradley. Keep on them.
Perfect.
That is the Bradley Hodge Social Media Self-Promoter Award. Hey, I've got a guide to self-isolation, and I'm using a book to help us. And it's a sort of a retro book review, Mr. Cricket, Driven to Succeed, right? And it's more about his rise, like the topics are, or the chapters, the baggy blue to baggy green, building confidence, an ideal grounding. Chapter 4, working with different personalities. 5, mental fatigue. 6, preparation's the key. 7, goal setting. Chapter 8, no guarantees. 9, what's it all about? And because if it's a cricket book, of course, the last chapter, stats. I mean, it's almost like a psychology book. I don't know if Jess read this, but she might have in her degree.
Well, she's a left-hander, so it's not surprising if she did.
Well, I wonder if she was like Mr. Cricket, who was born a right-hander but actually idolised Alan Border that much that he actually chose to bat left-handed here. But if I had to help, and why I say it helps people in isolation, is there's heaps of really good chapters. One is preparation's the key. And in isolation, where we are right now, it is. And he says preparation, habits, superstitions, they're all catchphrases that every sportsman regularly hears. How important are they? How strictly should you adhere to them? Now, we know in isolation, Hodgie, we've got to adhere to all this, isn't there? There's distancing, all that sort of stuff. But I'd reckon if anyone's trying or finding it hard to go to sleep, this is Mr. Cricket's sleep plan when he was playing. And I reckon it is very, very relevant for everyone, and even Donald Trump, for everyone in the world right now. Okay, sleep plan, afternoon/evening. No caffeine, milk is good. That's pretty good, isn't it? 9:30 p.m. Mr. Cricket says, dim the lights, some relaxing music, maybe some country and western, but get the TV off.
Okay.
10 p.m.
What if Ozark is on?
Well, I couldn't go to sleep if Ozark's on. This is probably pre-binge watching, so I'll talk to Mr. Cricket to update this. 10 p.m., go to bed. Dark room. Relax the body. I don't know his methods there. Clear the mind. Focus on breathing, okay? Also, waking in the night is normal. Tell yourself not to worry and relax. 7:30 a.m., wake, sunlight, fresh air. That should be – every government in the world should be reading this for a start, Slow Mo. Read that. Get that bloody sleep plan out to everyone. And everyone will be a lot happier in isolation. So Driven to Succeed, Mr. Cricket. Actually, for youngsters, get it. It's actually a really good book.
Mm. I'm going to question Mr. Cricket on that, actually. I would have thought 10 stubbies and a couple of glasses of rum would do it, but that's fair enough.
Anyway. Well, we will get him on, right? He owes me, Mr. Cricket. Yep. And we'll go through your pre-plans and sleep plans at the start of Shield Creek versus that. Hey, mate, just in closing, big news. We had a lot of people listen to the last one. Thanks for all the feedback as well. We went number one. This podcast, Biology Report, went number one. Guess what? It's an area we've been targeting, and we finally hit our goal, France.
The Congo?
We did have a couple of listeners from the Congo. That might be our goal next time. Number one in France during the week. France. Number one cricket podcast. And you know what? I've been playing French cricket. I've been throwing the ball against the wall. And actually, I'll send a video of that. And I'm not getting out LB. I'm protecting my legs. There is not enough French cricket getting played.
No way. Look, I'm not surprised we're huge in that part of France. I mean, they saw your underarm, in that semi-final from the 22 yards down to Gilchrist. That is French cricket all about. We don't want to go into the Chappelle sort of stuff. No. Fleming is the way forward in underarm cricket. So
they actually teach that in schools. They show that footage in schools. This is how you play French cricket. Look at this outdated goatee guy, graying head, underarming this, target this. My question is, can we get you a T20 gig over there? Can we add to your 582 T20 teams that you've already played for?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, I imagine that local cricket in France is shut down at the moment. But is there an opportunity on the other side of this to find myself an opportunity? I'm short of cash at the moment. There's not a lot coming in. I know that. So
yeah. So if it's what about the Arc de Triomphe 11? Why can't you captain them or coach them?
Well, I'm more French Riviera. I'm more sitting my ass on a beach and having a few cans after it. But if there is a team in the middle of Paris, I can possibly look to get it shifted down towards the French Riviera, and we can have a cracking time. No doubt,
let's get some feedback from our French listeners. But overall, Hodgie, thanks a lot for joining us. Jess was an absolute legend. I think for everyone, keep safe, keep isolated. Thank you to all the doctors and nurses who are working so hard for us out there. But Hodgie, we'll be back. We'll get another one going. We'll get another special guest. But stay safe, big fella.
We will finish off, Lem. Just a little one out there to anyone that does need some exercise. And this goes to show why you were so fit in the 80s. Jane Fonda exercise video. Check it out on YouTube. It's a classic. And Abigail Costello, I'm only 21 minutes in and I've felt like I've been doing this for an hour. No wonder everyone in the 80s was skinny legends. And I'll tell you what you'll also love that accompanies this video is the porno type music, which is on it. It's an absolute piece of gold. You've got to check it out. So all those things in.
We'll get it back on the charts. See you, OG.
See you, Flem.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.